Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
Welcome back, traumatized toffees of the airways. You are back with a very similar starting blue room. The kickabout is back, but I am simply one wheel on the tricycle of misery that we'll be riding around on this week. So myself, Matt Mosey, joined as ever by Rob Vera, and Keith Tomlin joins us as well. Lads, we'll go there eventually. We will talk about it. Everton currently standing 5 points off fifth, which is absolutely fine. Don't let that detract from how you're feeling at the moment. But Keith, you've got a bit of catching up to do from our show last week, mate. Football is important in everyone's life, of course, but we need to know when you put your Christmas decorations up, man.
Well, to be honest, I'm weighing up not doing it this year. This is genuinely like let's kick us off on like the most depressing sort of foot possible, which is very fitting for Everton right now. So I went through a change in personal circumstance at the start of year. Obviously, like a lot of people on the socials know that and stuff. So this is genuinely going to be the first Christmas that I've ever spent on my own. I'm weighing up not bothering with decorations and either like fleeing the country on a last minute deal or just getting blackout drunk and pretending it's not happening. So that's my choices. If I do put them up, it'll be the 1st of December. And no sooner, because any sooner is just like godless behavior.
One of the alternatives to avoiding Christmas would be to fully indulge yourself in your football team. I honestly don't know whether I could even push you in that direction.
Oh god, that's proper Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life, isn't it? Sitting on the bridge weighing up if it's all worth it or not.
Oh man!
Can you imagine your only escape from misery is Everton?
The second equally important thing I need to ask you is how is Shaw Villa getting on? Your team
flying at the moment. Since I took over as manager, we've only lost once in the last six games. I think it is now. We won in the cup at the weekend against the top of the league team on penalties. We were on proper bare bones, so I ended up playing. I came on as a sub on Sunday. Half hour cameo, the game completely passed me by, and we managed to sort of scrape it into penalties in the end. We hung on a little bit, and I obviously stepped up, took the first penalty of the shootout and set an example and buried it in the corner. So yeah, we did well. Our goalkeeper got us through it, really. He made some massive saves in the second half.
Yeah.
And then he stopped three penalties in the shootout. So can't grumble with that, can you?
Obviously, ordinarily, for those who don't know, you're the manager of the team. So
when, I am. I'm still registered as a player.
Well, I was going to say, when you decided to full-on Daniel Amakachi yourself onto the pitch, does that change the dynamic? Is that an easy role to kind of slip into, or are you still kind of like barking orders mid-game?
Oh, no, I leave it to the touchline. Designate. So our club captain is injured at the moment, and we were that badly off that he was on the bench as well. With recently healed broken ribs. So when I went on, I said to him, right, okay, you're in charge of the subs. And then 5 minutes later, someone got injured and he had to come on as well. Oh, so eventually it's just me and him sort of in midfield. The popular meme with Paul Rudd, where he said, look at us, how did we get here? Who expected this? Not me. That was basically me and him in midfield as they just ran past us time and time again. But thankfully the other lads got us through till full time, and we made the most of the shootout. So yeah, going well.
So you're obviously living off a bit of a new manager bounce here. So I don't know, are all the talks in the dressing room about, you know, Keith's doing a great job as an interim position, but we don't want to go full Solskjaer with this, are we here for the massive revolution now?
I think we're in for the long term. The lads seem to have bought into what I'm telling them, and I'm happy with it. We're playing. Do you know what? We're actually playing some really nice football as well, which is good. As nice as football as you can play on Sunday league pitches, obviously. We're doing well. We're flying.
I mean, Keith's my friend, but I'm going to reserve judgment on his performance as a manager until I get the XG metrics. And when I get those, then we'll talk about whether or not Keith is a good manager or not. So,
our XG must be pretty good, because we don't shoot a lot, but we seem to score every time we have a shot, which is good.
We'll have to take a game in, Rob, when you're over. Assuming your league doesn't finish over winter, Keith, we'll definitely
be
there.
I think we'll be on a winter break, unfortunately. They shut the league down for a couple of weeks.
Like a 5 minute sub at center half for you guys, or something like that.
I would have you in the squad in a minute, Rob, in a heartbeat.
I'm 6'3" in Latin. Surely I have some qualities that lend itself to being a center half, right? I'm bigger than Mason Holgate, I'll tell you that.
talking about triumphant footballing returns, a bit of news that came out this week was Tony Hibbett coming out of retirement to play for a 10th tier French team, who, quite honestly, on Sunday at 3:45, I was ready to fully convert to. But yeah, after coaching the under 13 side for a few months, he's going to step in and do a role. Is he going to go and play right back, or is he going to sort of play this Keith Tomlin-esque centre midfield maverick role, do we think?
It's something about, isn't it, like ex-pros when they drop into like the junior leagues and that, they always seem to end up as like an anchoring midfielder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where they played, like through their career, they always end up as a centre mid when they play non-league.
Is the 10th tier of French football, is that higher up the pyramid than Shore Villa is, Keith?
It might be similar, you know.
I mean, we put an offer in to Tony and his people, but unfortunately they turned us down. So
yeah, I know. Well, it's probably because the manager's sucking up so much of the finances with his six-figure a week salary for being a player manager. So
quite right as well.
The rumors of Keith's head being turned by the prospective Paris Saint-Germain job availability was something that Tony Hibbett just couldn't quite commit to. But yeah, footballing comebacks all around, it seems. But yeah, as we alluded to on the post-match, for anyone who's listened to it the weekend, I managed to escape most of sport at the weekend by heading up to the Lake District, which, Rob, I know that you said, you know, you'll have to enlighten me about what the Lake District is like. The only way I could really describe places like the Lakes and the Cotswolds and probably a little bit of the Peak District over here as well, is that it's probably what most Americans think that most of England looks like.
Yeah.
As an English person, it was quite nice to, as much as it's only sort of an hour and a half or 2 hours from home, it's probably an area of the country that I've neglected for shores further afield over time. But yeah. I don't know, this is probably what COVID's done to people of most nations, isn't it? In terms of not being able to travel and kind of look more intrinsically at what's on your doorstep. But no, it was nice to get a bit of fresh air and for the large part avoid Everton. I must admit, on the Sunday, stopping at a relatively terrible pub for dinner and then indulging in that 90 minutes. It was the come down that everyone experiences on the back of a holiday of any length. But no, it's probably another one that we should try and escape to, Rob, when you're over.
Okay. Yeah, it was funny. In one of the WhatsApp chats that I'm in, I know I think it was Matt Flusk, Keith, and maybe you and a couple others trying to explain to me what the quote, the lakes are. I think the Asher was too, like, and then someone said, well, but just, it's probably not like what you guys consider to be lakes. It's nothing like the Great Lakes. And I was just thinking to myself, then I thought to myself, do people who aren't from America think that most of our lakes are the size of the Great Lakes? Like, the Great Lakes are the size, like, they're like mini oceans, you know what I mean? Like, there are ships that go down in the Great Lakes that never return. I mean, they've written songs about them and stuff, but I just imagine, like, most lakes here are man-made, so therefore, and I don't know if the lakes that you're referring to include man-made lakes or if these are only natural lakes, but you know, most of our lakes are, you know, decent size, but they're not intimidating. It's, you know, it's a body of water where there's usually an opportunity to pop open a few beers and, enjoy the scenery. And that's pretty much the function of a lake, that, and maybe a little bit light fishing if you're into, something that requires a lot of effort and doesn't produce a ton of results. As Everton fans, I imagine that's something we can relate to when it comes to fishing. So, I am up for, and that's the thing is I keep looking at the calendar, guys. And this is why I keep kind of saying I put myself in your hands, but you know, I get in and it seems like I'm there for a while, but man, all of a sudden you look at that calendar and it just like there's not enough time. There's never enough time when I'm there. But I would like to get out of the city at least one time while I'm there. Cause I have not, the last few times I've been, flown to Manchester, come straight to Liverpool, stayed in Liverpool the whole time, which is great. I love, obviously I love this city or I wouldn't be coming. But at least when I had flown the first time over and, you know, landed in London, I had the train ride at least to just see the countryside, to see some non-city things. But I am up for some sort of country or lake excursion. So if you guys want to make this happen, please don't hesitate to let me know. I'm
fully up for that.
In your hands.
I believe there's a day where we've been tasked with babysitting you because Mr. Diasha's at a family function.
Yeah.
So I think what we'll do is we'll escape the city, we'll go to the lakes, we'll do some sort of a gentle climb and then finish off with lunch and pints by Lake Windermere.
Oh, that sounds incredible.
Which you will enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, I'm all about a good hike. I enjoy those, so that'll be fun.
I've just realized that the lakes probably will mirror a series of puddles compared to some of the lakes that you've got over
again,
there.
Again, see, you're already doing it. I'm sure they will be perfectly fine lakes, Mark.
No, they're all vast oceans, as you say. But no, I mean, one of the Great Lakes, certainly in the Northwest, I would say, is the Marine Lake in West Kirby. So, yeah, me and Keith will show you around there, absolutely.
Okay. That's a lovely walk on a Sunday afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, primarily because there are pubs totally surrounding the place, which, as we found out at the weekend, is the essential task that you need to do when you go on any rural excursion is bring it right back down to earth through the medium of ale. We managed to do that quite a few times. Keith, I don't know how much of the lakes you've done. We were in Ambleside, which was about 10 minutes away from Windermere, and I'm not gonna speak generally and collectively for everywhere in the Lake District. But my God, that place is moody when the sun goes down. And you know, it's just one of those areas of the country where you just think you all live in quintessential rural heaven. There could be nothing for you to be angry or upset about with each other. But the level of pub scrapping that went on, I'm not going to talk about people with cob-ons because we had enough of Rob slaying our English language last week.
A cob-on sounded like, did you hear what I said that I thought a cob-on was, Keith?
Go on.
I said we were trying, he was giving me all these Scouse words that I was supposed to know the meaning of, and some of them I did. But he said a cob on, and I said it sounds like a really angry erection. That's what I came up with, which was not what it is.
Yeah, no, not quite. But it's I can see your line of thinking there.
Yeah. There you go, Mark. Keith gets
truly
it.
Haunting so, analysis of the English language.
So Mark, places that you went, you said there are a lot of, like, when you say scraps, so I'm guessing people were drinking too much and getting into it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But it's the exact type of thing that occasionally you would expect to see in a city night out. You know, we live in Liverpool, but plenty of this goes on, and people will know exactly the nature and the type of places where, unfortunately, you will run into this sort of thing. But, Rob, you've probably got places similar close to home whereby if you were to escape for a weekend of this nature, the idea is that you don't necessarily get an enormous amount of aggression, but it was just bizarre to see. You know, on the rolling hills of the Lake District, all of a sudden there's a flying glass going across the
Cumbria in general can be quite moody though.
I didn't know this.
Not so much in the, like, by Windermere and that, you would expect that to be a bit more tranquil. But if you ever if you ever venture up to, like, the working towns up in the north of Cumbria, like Workington and Cockermouth and stuff, I've worked up there several times. They are vicious and they can smell an outsider from 20 paces. And it's very much that whole, this is a local pub for local people sort of scenario. You walk in and it's like for reference for Rob, it's like in a Western when the cowboy walks in the saloon and the door slams and everything stops. The band stops playing. Everyone turns to look. The poker game finishes. That's what it's like walking into a pub in Workington, because they all just turn and stare at you as you walk to the bar. And it can be quite intimidating. So you do, you draw yourself up and you're like, all right, not going to back down from this challenge. And you get to the bar and you're like, yeah, I'm going to have one here and then I'm going to get off, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a moody vibe.
There's absolutely places like that here. You know, ask a person of color going into a small town bar in the south of the United States and they can tell you about that vibe for sure. I've been to places like that. I am a master, by the way. I'm not, like, no one is better at looking tough in a situation like that than me. Now, don't test me. I'm not tough, but I can really, you know, I've got the broad shoulders and I can really, like, I can make a mean face, you know? You know, like, don't fuck with me face. Now, if they fuck with me, I mean, the game's up. I'm probably, you know, I'm going to hope that I can hurl my friends at the problem or something like that. But, the thing about places like that is that it's sort of like when you go to, as you said, Keith, the local pub for local people, they sort of feel like, the whole vibe that they kind of exude there is that this is a place for us where we can feel comfortable being us and saying what us wants to say about anything while we're drinking. And we don't want anyone coming in from the outside who's going to, you know, kind of rock that boat a little bit. You know, I think people, it's sort of like if you were the group of friends and suddenly a person sitting at a table, you know, the table next to you, just kind of, you can tell that they're eavesdropping a little bit and suddenly you get real defensive about it. I think that's the whole vibe of places like that, is that there's just, they can, like you said, they can smell an outsider They can tell by the clothes you're wearing. And certainly I am hyper aware of the fact that as soon as I open my mouth, people know that I'm from somewhere else. and so that's why I find myself when I'm over there, I really just kind of follow the leader, if you will. Like when we go out in groups, you guys, I follow you in. You know where we're going. I don't talk to people generally that I don't need to talk. You know, I wait for someone else to engage with someone first. And, you know, I'm just trying to get out of there with my drink in hand and really not piss anyone off, you know? So I don't know. There's something about being the I say the word foreigner, but I just mean from the standpoint of even if you're from a city 2 hours away and you go into a place in a small town where you don't know anyone, there's sometimes is that undercurrent there. It's weird how if you add alcohol to any situation, it creates tension.
It was very much sort of infighting by the locals. It was almost as though they were vying of the position of top local in order to start fighting off all of these outsiders, as you say, Rob.
I want a t-shirt that says top local.
I also realize that's probably the first time you ever heard of a place called Cockermouth, and the look on your face did not go past me.
I made a face. Yes, I just like that is the most. The fact that Keith could just say Cockermouth without even like not even pausing, just said the word like it was a normal word, like he just said the word hamburger or something like that. It was I got to get to this place. Maybe Keith, maybe that's where we should go. We would
definitely get to test the local pub theory. I think it might be risky with your accent and my accent combined. They'd definitely be on us.
My second favorite Vera face is when we go down that route of him obviously living in a Western movie set, which I think we've all decided that he definitely does. So the thought of Rob strolling down the boardwalk into his favorite saloon and looking quite tough, I think that's essentially Rob.
Yeah.
How Oklahoma and you are in tandem.
Right. I've seen what Rob's neighborhood looks like because he's shown me videos of it and stuff, but it just does not compute. When I think of Rob, I think of like he lives in an old like corral town. There's horses tied up on the corner. There's a cowboy walking down the street, spurs jangling.
Right.
Sheriff steps out ready.
He's in with trouble. The sheriff.
That's in my head.
See, Keith, I go to great pains to express to people that I live, according to the most recent census, in the 22nd largest city in the United States. It is got great art and great restaurants and great, you know, there's culture here. The people are lovely. And, you know, we're not the stereotype. And then inevitably on the news, there will be an alert that somehow a cow or a horse has gotten onto the interstate highway and they've had to stop traffic. And then I'm like, damn it, guys, we're so close to being respected. And then this shit's got to come out, you know?
It's probably being dumped there by one of your numerous typhoons or tornadoes or whatever. It's just like whistling up the road that day.
Well, between the Tiger King documentary, which certainly did this state no favors, and our notable weather issues with tornadoes, I mean, yeah, it sounds like I feel like people will watch an old Clint Eastwood Western and think, yeah, that's probably what Oklahoma's kind of like, you know, something like that. And the thing is, you're not totally wrong. It is that way. It is still kind of that way in the rural parts of the state, which is, you know, a lot of the state. So because there's a lot of states over here. And I think that's the thing. And Keith, you spent a considerable amount of time in America, you know, because I think that for people whose experience in America has been flying to New York, which is great, by the way. I mean, New York's one of the great cities in the world. But like going to New York, going to Vegas, whatever, you're getting a very curated tourist sort of view of the country. I think the thing that you sometimes forget is, and I do even living here, is how big the United States really is. So you think of all the cities, right? But there's still, even with the population we have here, there's still so much open space here that you have so much area within a state that has small towns and you know, that sort of vibe. Like even New York, the state of New York, once you get outside the city, it is scenic, pastoral, you know, villages and bridges and you know, over lakes and mountains, and it's gorgeous. And it doesn't seem like anything that would come to mind when you say the words New York. Conversely, a place like Oklahoma has city, has certain things, you know, that aren't like that, but yet you can never really get away from it too much. Like there's literally a place, a museum, about 5 minutes from my house called the National Cowboy Hall of Fame Museum. Okay. And now it's like the National Western Heritage Museum. It's something like that. But basically it's all like these giant works of art, like paintings and sculptures and all that, but it's all Western themed. So if you are looking for the whole cowboys and Indians sort of thing committed to art, like we've got that. But yeah, I've come over there so many times. I'm probably going to start making demands that you guys at some point come visit me so I can show you where I actually live instead of just explaining it. Cause I do think there'll always be something lost in the translation until you actually see a place for sure. So
yeah, but I might just do that next year. Like I have no holiday plans next year, so I might just come to the States.
Yeah, just come to, you know, I always tell people if you want to, you know, if it's too much trouble flying into, I mean, look, anywhere, a lot of places you fly and then you have to take one more flight or whatever. But, you know, you from London, for instance, you can fly directly to Dallas, or you can fly I've flown from London to Austin, Texas direct before. You know, you can fly anywhere from there you want, but even in Manchester, granted some of this post COVID may be a little different, cause I know they're still kind of ramping up some of the airways, but you know, from Manchester, you can fly direct to Atlanta, direct to New York, direct to, you know, a few other Eastern United States cities for sure. But you obviously have the most options in London, but even if you flew from Manchester to, let's say, Atlanta, you're then taking an hour and a half flight from Atlanta to Dallas or something like that, hour 45 minutes, easy flight, you know? So, again, I don't want to pretend like flying to the States is some easy thing, but now that I'm on my fourth trip to Liverpool, I feel like at some point I'm going to need you guys to come visit me, darken my door for a bit. So,
and we could definitely meet in New Orleans, Rob, because the last time I looked at the map, it's only that far away. so that can't happen. That can only be like what, half an hour?
You want to know how far New Orleans is? Like, what's funny is you look at a map of the United States, and it shows this. The thing about maps is how much they fuck with your mind, right? Because you look at a map and you think, oh, okay, that's not that far. Like New Orleans is still like a 12-hour drive from Oklahoma. It's so long. I feel like I could get from the furthest northern England to the tip of, like, I could get to Bournemouth or Weymouth or something like that in less time, but then I remember that the roads are probably not such a direct path in any particular direction. But
12 hours of driving, you'd be in Spain.
Yeah, exactly. It's insanity. So, oh man, travel talk, guys. As we get closer to the trip, I cannot tell you how excited I am. But I need you guys tell me where I'm going, and I'm game. I'm open. And right, by the way, I'm in town for two Everton home matches. I don't even know. Maybe I just skip the Everton part altogether. That way, we have more time to do fun things.
I mean, I feel like it will be the worst part of your trip. Will be those that 3 hours you spend encased inside Everton.
I gotta go to at least one of them, but I'm, you know, probably gonna still go to both. You know, who knows?
We've had a lot of decisive moments on Saturday afternoons at 2:30, 2:45, thinking, do we actually do this? Keith, I've never actually gone full match avoidance, but I don't know if you've ever got to that point, but I know we can all advocate escaping the place as early as possible when it's I've never, even under Allardyce, I never quite got to that point of temptation to just bin it off.
I have, in the sense that, like, there were some weeks where I just didn't fancy it and just got rid of my ticket. But when you're committed on a match day to go in, I've always at least made it inside for, like, a varying period of time. I think I've said it on this show before. I've certainly said it on Mailbag before. The shortest time I ever spent inside Goodison was 20 minutes. I arrived just as they were kicking off against Man United. It was just after New Year under Allardyce.
I was there. That was my first game.
I left after 20 minutes. It was still 0-0. And I just, like, genuinely, I'd had enough. Like, we hadn't strung together more than two passes in a sequence in 20 minutes. And I was like, no, I don't need this. I've got better things to do with my day. So I just got up and left. It was like one of the wettest days ever as well. So I was soaked from walking from the car to the ground. And I just thought, nah, I'm going on.
For that reason, it excites me that we're about to talk about a game today where our average pass sequence was three. I have said it was three. Oh, Lord, what a
football team.
Well, so what is there to talk about? I mean, we can talk about it, Mark, because I feel, you know, you're going to lead us like Christ into the sea of Galilee of misery that is fucking Everton. But I will tell you that I am worried a little. Well, not worried is the wrong word, but like, when you start losing this many in a row, or you're winless for this long, it's that time every year where I start to realize that, oh, I wonder if you could go find a podcast of ours from 2 years ago at this time, and it just sounded exactly the same. Like, Everton Twitter right now is totally, I see we've now moved today, at least, into, you know, the whole mode of, you know, they need to gut this whole thing, and people getting really moody about, I don't have enough access to the shareholders meeting and stuff that it's the same old shit. It's like, I don't know. I just wonder if we've just run out of things to talk about when it's the same problems every time. Like, if you're mad all the time, then you're not mad. That's just how you feel. And therefore, that if that's your standard mood, then, you know, being mad suggests that there were times when you weren't mad or when you were happy with things, and our happiness with Everton is so fleeting. But I watched, I don't know about you guys. I think Keith, you may not have watched the game at all. I watched until, and Mark, I still ended up going back and reading and watching highlights, if you want to use that word in such a bastardized way. But like, I don't know what to. I basically turned off right after City scored their first goal, because once they scored, I just thought, we don't have anything left. I mean, there's nothing. They had shown nothing up to that point. So I'm like, I think once they gone 1-0 up, it'd be one thing if it looked like we were getting shots on target and we were troubling them at all. I think the funniest thing I saw after the game was, you know, how the social media managers for every one of these Premier League players has to put up like a action photo of them in the game, that Ederson literally had to show a picture of him making a quote save in warmups because he had nothing to show during the game. It's just, it's bad. And it's just so, it's such forgettable sport.
Yeah,
that I don't know what can be expected. Like, at a certain point, what do they expect us to talk about on here? You know, these podcasts, there's you know, a little mini podcast war going on online at all times usually, but I've heard accusations thrown around about, you know, podcasts about Everton or about football being a little too generic at times, or cookie cutter, I think was the word I saw used by you know, one of the podcasts. And I thought to myself, well, we here at the Kickabout try to do anything but cookie cutter by, you know, just going into whatever weird territory we want. But B, what do you talk about when every season is the same? It's such Groundhog Day every season. So I just sort of don't even know what you would have me talk about. So for me, it's just kind of like, what do you want? Okay. Everyone's injured. No one likes the manager. No one likes the tactics. No one likes what they're seeing. And it's and we're headed straight towards mid-table. And some people think we're going to get relegated or we should get relegated, but that's not going to happen. I still don't think so. I don't know. I'm just at a loss. I feel like I'm having the same conversation over and over again.
To on your wider point, Rob, in terms of, you know, I'm sure we're not the only football team's fans who feel like this, but the point you make about kind of treading over all ground is something that, you know, I'm sure most Evertonians are inwardly aware of. The fact that we do vocally talk about it on a weekly basis, obviously on this platform, we are hyper conscious about being that type of football fan, aren't we, in terms of talking over the same ground. The reason why that has probably intensified over the last couple of years is that we are beyond the honeymoon, if you want to call it that, period of Farhad Moshiri. I think that would be a totally wrong word to use. But obviously the initial 3 or 4 years always had with it the promise of something better. And I think over the last 2 years, we've unfortunately hit this plateau of despair whereby the players haven't really had a great deal amount of turnover. Obviously, the managers have, but to no great effect. And I think that the big thing that most Evertonians will talk to you about at the moment is the lack of connectivity with the team, the total loss of interest that they have with how the team are doing or any particular individual that exists within it. And I think that is, as we've said time and time again on this podcast, that is nothing but dangerous. And that's the antithesis of what Everton should be, because we've never been that good at football for, what are we, 30 years now. But there's always been that sense of meaning and belonging about what we are all collectively doing here, be it the players we go out and sign or the ritual that we've spoken about on a match day. There was an underlying sense of purpose to it all. And I don't know, the one moment that stuck in my mind from the weekend was, do you know what? There's so much of the football that can be overlooked because they are clearly more gifted than us. But when the players were coming back out for the second half, I don't know if any of you saw this, but I called it straight away in terms of looking at every one of them to a man coming back onto the playing pitch and thought, they do not look like they are interested one bit in how the next 45 minutes of their life goes. And there was a notable vision of defeatism about them. And do you know what? I bet you there is a little bit of that when you're going out onto the Etihad and you're 1-0 down and the best player that you've probably got in the squad on current form has gone off injured in the first half. I get it. But these things happen. And for me, if I would have looked at those players going out onto the pitch and they didn't have a shirt on and I visually didn't know who they were playing for, I would say that they're Everton players of the last 2 to 3 years, because we have that general demeanour of just despair about us. It's probably the only word I can use, because the fans have had it for far longer than the current crop of players have, but there is an overwhelming sense of doom with everything about this football team at the moment. And obviously, as you mentioned, Rob, the clearest form of this is the actual form table itself, which doesn't read pretty. And I think that the only thing that's slightly more terrifying than the last 5 games in terms of form is the prospect of the next 5. And clearly, what happened on Sunday as a team collective, and in particular to someone like Damari Gray, and to a lesser extent Richarlison, is absolutely not helping this at all. But do you know what? Teams like Everton are going to get beat by Man City. They're going to get beat by Liverpool. They're going to get beat by Chelsea. And it's probably all going to happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But all of the mantras and all of the sayings and all of the things that we speak about Everton and how they're different from every other football team, etc., etc., all of these things that we like to say and like to believe. I think the one thing that is universally unacceptable, we'd all agree, is the nature of how you go down and the nature of how you get beaten. I think Sunday, from what we all saw, was a collection of an inferiority complex. And again, we know we're not necessarily superior in terms of technical ability, but that there has to be some level of intrinsic pride about you as a professional footballer to define how you are going to get beat in football games if that is to happen. And of course it is going to. But that dangerous combination of attitude and really careless personal mistakes, it's pretty unforgivable. And do you know what? We got away with it because Man City only put 3 past us. And to be honest, they were crap. They didn't have De Bruyne.
Three goals was flattering. The fact that it was only 3 goals was kind of amazing, really, if you watched any of that game.
That's the worst version, isn't it? That is the absolute worst version of Man City that you can ever wish to play. And do you know what? It's still a good version. It's still a good football team, and they've got some incredibly gifted players. But we saw 4 weeks ago, Crystal Palace, who are, for my money, I know they've got an up-and-coming manager. They're in good form, etc. People are talking about them as being in the middle of some mini evolution. They're 1 point above Everton, and we've been absolutely dreadful.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's fair to compare what Everton did at the weekend to what they did 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Well, Mark, I'd remind you too that I've heard plenty of "I told you so" about Graham Potter. And Brighton are 2 points ahead of us. For as bad as we've been and as good as they started, and we started well too. I mean, I wonder, and Keith, I want to bring you into this part of the conversation too, because I think the thing that we all bang our heads against the wall with is the question of, well, what fixes this? And if you've gone through half a decade or so where you've pretty much, you know, the last 5 to 7 years, bar Seamus Coleman, you've pretty much turned over the squad. You have turned over countless managers and coaching staff members. Now we've gotten rid of Daniel Donacci because, you know, we need to get, you know, medical team needs an overhaul. Like, so you've done all of those things. And so Mark said earlier something, Keith, that I want your thought on, which I want to peel back the layers on this a bit more, which is this just a feeling of who cares, this who cares feeling that we start to have? Is this can't just be us, right? Like, there've got to be several other fan bases in the Premier League who feel the same way. So my question becomes, is it about how bad things are at Everton? Or is all of what we're seeing and the fact that we cannot seem to change it simply a byproduct of the way in which the sport and the league have changed, you know, to favor the same group winning everything and therefore de-incentivizing a lot of what these play, a lot of what happens every week amongst all the other teams? Now hear me out here for a second. I think it's a confluence of factors, but these players aren't total idiots. Like, they know that if they're at Everton, that they are not at, as much as I love Everton, we're a big club historically, but they're not at the cream of the crop in terms of the biggest clubs in the league, the handful of clubs that actually compete for trophies and titles, right? Well, then you combine that with I don't know how many international breaks that we constantly seem to have, and the emphasis on the national team side of the equation being so important. Like, guys like Richarlison, Yerry Mina, Jordan Pickford, if you really put a gun to their head and said, which of these is most important to you? It's their country. It's playing for their country, and it's that every day and twice on Sunday. Regardless of the fact that they're not being paid for it, it's not, you know, in the same way that they are for their club. It's just that they've got a confluence of factors. One, feeling like you are in a league that has become increasingly less competitive. Two, being, you know, playing in a nonstop, grueling schedule where you, in the case of Everton, and Everton aren't alone in this, you have a constant turnover of managers. You're competing for the same sort of scraps every year. At a certain point, do they all just kind of look at each other every week and just, you know, like, is the reason that they don't have that togetherness, they don't have that cohesiveness, they don't have that spirit to fight for the badge just simply a matter of the fact that they are now divided? They as players are now divided up into other interests and other things that they should care about more than playing for Everton, because I don't know that there seems like there's as much to play for. Like, if you're in a league where you know at the very beginning of the season you're not going to win the league, and now that we're out of the League Cup, that's one more trophy down. So, like, what is it that motivates these players beyond the park end? Well, they're getting paid every week, they should be motivated to blah, blah, blah. Like, I get that. But what's keeping them interested? Because as much as we're sitting here saying we're not interested, I think they're not. I think a lot of these players, and I don't just mean at Everton, but I think a lot of Premier League players, when you combine COVID, international travel, World Cup qualifying, the fact that they play for a team that is just going to kind of tread water, like, is it hard for them to get up for that every week?
I mean, yeah, it probably is. Yeah. I mean, like, going back to what you said about preferring to play for the national team, I mean, you look at Richarlison and Yerry Mina, would you rather go and, like, take a Would you rather go and take a 9-10 hour flight, go home and play two games in a week in front of, like, a hysterical sellout crowd with that sort of South American passion where they're screaming for the team constantly, the players are adored, they're treated as, like, conquering heroes? Or would you rather, like, play 90 minutes a week in front of Goodison where it's just, like, I mean, yeah, we have the discussions about the Goodison atmosphere. It comes up every year. But it's crap. It's dead. It's horrible. It is just, it's soulless until it's a strange point that is very Everton. But Goodison comes alive when bad things happen. Like, you get a bad decision like that, like the penalty against Spurs that was given then taken away. And after that, the ground was raucous.
Yeah.
But it takes that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just, I don't know. It's just for me, it's just apathy, like, all across the board. Certainly my feelings towards it are just complete and utter apathy towards Everton.
But that's the thing is, is the product interesting? Like, let me ask you guys, take Everton out of the equation for the minute. Do you guys find the Premier League that intriguing in 2021 or last year or the year before? Like, outside, like, and if your answer is, well, the top six, I'm interested in that. Well, then you're already kind of answering the question as to, why can't these players for these non-top six teams get up for this every week? Like, if you're not interested, there is that symbiotic relationship between fans and players. Like, I think some of them just frankly know that, depending, you know, if you're at certain clubs, it's,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, they've got, like,
what are you playing for? Like, there's no carrot there. If, you know, I mean, other than, don't say that they're I get that they're professionals. I'm just telling you, if to answer the question that we always get asked of why aren't these players up for it every week, I think that, believe it or not, under Moyes, at least, I think maybe there was a sense back then that there was, yes, a big top four back then, but yet there was, you were within touching distance all the time at Everton of maybe fourth or getting fifth or sixth, or, you know, I remember we were constantly in the Euro, you know, in the Europa League, and I'd give my left arm to be playing Shakhtar Donetsk oh God, what was that? Another one of those Ukrainian teams that was just out in the middle of medalist Kharkiv or whatever. Yeah. Like, man, give me the days of Big Vic scoring late on against those. Like, I just think that there's such an indifference that is not just about Everton, and it's not just about our fan base, and it's not just our players, that I think permeates through so much of this league, that if we look at this league every week and think the other 14 teams are pretty much fodder for the other six, well, the players are not dumb. They probably figured that out themselves. Now, don't get me wrong. Every season, you have the six that are competing for things, and you usually have one or two other teams. Like, you have one surprise team. You have, like, last season, you have a West Ham that kind of gets in the mix. Or, you know, this season, like, Wolves are sixth right now. Don't expect that to last long either. You have a Sheffield United that maybe surprises you because it's their first year back in the league, and that's where those players' motivation comes from, is that they're in the Premier League. They're excited. This is a new thing. When you're Everton and you've always been in the Premier League and it's all every season's kind of always the same, you know, like, I don't know, and you've changed the manager and you've changed players and you've done everything else, I'm trying to identify what it is that leads to the abject football we saw on Sunday. Whereas before, you would think, I would like to be in the sort of league where Everton looks at a team like City and says, oh man, the best team in the league is coming to our place on Sunday. We got to go all out. We got to, you know, we may lose this, but it is going to be balls to the wall. The crowd's going to be into it. And yet, that they can't get up for City. They can't get up for games that they should be able to get up for. And I don't think that's a uniquely Everton problem as much as we, the fan base, like to treat it like it's just an Everton problem. I think it's a league-wide problem.
It very much contributes towards how we feel about that, though, doesn't it, Rob? I mean, God forbid if we'd have gone out in the summer and actually plugged a couple of these holes and managed to find ourselves, I don't know, seventh in the table at the moment, then all of a sudden there are achievable goals. And I know you mentioned about West Ham. There's no reason why, if someone actually screwed their head on at this football club and produced a couple of good transfer windows, there's absolutely no reason why we can't be in that situation. I'm not going to talk about West Ham being on some form of unachievable pedestal that Everton can't simply touch. I know they won the World Cup single-handedly 50 years ago, but they are not a totally superior football team to Everton. On a week-by-week basis, they may well be at the moment, and they are certainly clicking on a totally higher level than we are. But we shouldn't be talking about them or, I don't know, in recent years, a Wolves or, to a certain extent, even a Tottenham Hotspur. These are not stratospherically better football teams than Everton. We've been so bad that we've driven ourselves, I think, to this point. And you're right, it's by no means a uniquely Everton state of mind. There will be the vast majority of the league who, for so many of the reasons that you've mentioned, in terms of primarily finance in this league and the kind of breakaway of the top four year on year, goals do become less and less achievable. But you know what? If someone actually did this properly, we could get ourselves back to, dare I say, the lofty heights that we're talking about under David Moyes of finishing sixth in the league, which should be absolute priority for Everton, and just as you mentioned, playing in European competition. But I don't know if I can sit here and say that the only reason why we play at the moment is just to try and maintain our best players. And do you know what? That is how it feels a lot of the time. It feels like Everton are week by week asking what we can do for some of these star players, as opposed to asking what they can do for us. And it just feels like we are on this eternal wheel of trying to convince people like Richarlison to stay. Certainly, there's been points already in this season where I've thought, well, our only goal at the moment is to make sure that we are able to bring people like Gray and people like Richarlison, and in particular someone like Calvert-Lewin, back next season and tell them, do you know what, lads, it's all going to be different in 2022-23. I can see it now. But there is a point where Richarlison will stop being as daft as he is, and he'll move on, because we are not giving him and giving other players the platform and the presentable progress that they need to be convinced by whatever this thing is.
True, you're absolutely right, Mark. But if we were finishing, let's say we finished sixth last season, sixth before, and we're kind of in that 8-6 range now, something like that. You know, like we were. I don't know. It feels like, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, but the reason that a super league rears its head is because there has been a narrative that has become very durable, that has been created for an entire generation of footballers and the fans that watch them, that only a certain small subset of these games matter. And there are only a small subset of clubs who play in said games that therefore matter. And it feels like every season we are, to your point, Mark, constantly having this discussion of, oh, are we going to be able to keep this player? Are we going to be able to? And you're right. Like the players, the motivation for the players, even when we talk about the way we talk about transfers, a lot of times devolves. And Keith, you know, you've been part of these conversations with me in group chats before, but it devolves into, well, we've got to get a player who's young and hungry. And I don't disagree with that. But the premise behind that is that, well, we're not going to motivate them with, you know, coming to a club and being paid well and all those things that are kind of the normal motivations. I mean, maybe they're motivated when they get a big raise for the first time. I mean, that's, of course, a thing. But we are literally just thinking about them in terms of, we need to get players who are going to want to come to our club and play so well for themselves that they can get out of our club as quickly as possible. You know, like it becomes this concept. And I understand that there have always been bigger fish out there that eat smaller fish and that is the nature of sport. Right. But that dynamic has become so entrenched that like players, you will see great players sometimes who will want to join us, who will do anything they can to get that move, even if it means they're sitting on the bench and they're only playing in, you know, like the reason they would play for a Champions League side, but they're only playing like a handful of games every season or what have you. But hey, they can at least say they're on this side. You know, I'd like to think that you could motivate a player by saying, hey, you know, we're not in Europe right now, but you come to Everton. You know, like Luis Diaz, you know, if I use him as an example, and this, he's not coming to us, but, you know, he's the kind of player I would look at and say, look, you're going to come here and you're going to start in the Premier League in the most watched league on earth every week. And then, you know, whatever happens, happens. But we just get now into like Everton discussion isn't about winning anymore. It's always about, well, let's, you know, we need to solve, everyone talking about the need to solve these structural problems that we all know exist at the club that aren't really going to get solved when we as fans don't really hold any of these people accountable. Like we bitch and moan about the director of football. He is never made to face the media. The manager trots out there once a week, the day before the game, lies his ass off to everybody about who's injured and who's not. And we call that transparency. The players are not made available for any, you know, they are given the most sterile, safe space media availability to a handful of people who tell the same stories and ask the same questions and have entrenched the same system in place forever. And it's just like we were talking about this on our chat before, like the product of the Premier League. You know, like I almost don't even blame the news outlets because, you know, the biggest intrigue every season is the managerial carousel. It's, well, you know, who's going to be the new manager once they get rid of Ole at United? Well, they finally did it. So now who's that going to be? And then it's the same, you know, and it's Spurs and wherever. It's the same handful of guys that have had all the big jobs just trading off, you know, like Conte has a job at Spurs now. Eventually he'll have a job somewhere else. And the guy that left that job will eventually get the job at Spurs. And it's just, it's the same boring shit. And what's amazing is that we literally have a league with some of the most gifted athletes on earth. They are the product. They are the story. And yet we have created an environment around them and the product in general to A, water it down as much as possible, B, never make improvements to officiating to make the sport more watchable, better, more consistent, et cetera. And C, we hide the players' media availability to the point where the only thing we ever really learn about them are what the club website will decide to tell us about in a quote unquote exclusive interview that they get, or a player deciding to just post something random on his social media, but the players have no incentive whatsoever to talk about themselves or do anything. So then the product is just, it's artificially depressed, and it becomes, if the product is boring and the product being the game, the players, whatever, then I just think that manufacturing motivation is difficult. I just think it's really difficult. This sport needs a rethink, or the league needs a rethink, not the sport. The league needs a rethink, and the way in which players are handled, coddled, whatever you want to call it, needs a rethink. But I think that the fact, Mark, that you said before we got on, we are 5 points out of fifth place right now. Any other league on earth, a team that is that close to a, you know, whatever you want to call it, like a Keith in the NFL, like a playoff spot, a, you know, a trip, whatever. You're like within spitting distance of the team that you want to get to. Usually that team that's only, in this case, 5 points back is excited, is motivated, is busting their ass to get better. They're dealing with injuries, but we're going to get guys back. There just seems to be a malaise and a complete indifference that if you think you feel it as fans, I think the players feel it. And I think it's written all over their faces, just like you pointed out, Mark, when they came out of the tunnel after halftime.
Well, How's this for a theory on it all, right? The problem isn't the product. The product has always been this way, because since 1990, how many teams have won the league? Six?
Yeah.
Tops, yeah, five or six. Right? Yeah. In 30 years, right? Winning the league has been a closed shop since the 1980s, right?
Right.
The product has always been the same teams will do well, and the other teams, occasionally you'll have a team that sort of runs them close for a little while, like Everton did in the mid to late noughties. Then you've got like Leicester doing it recently, West Ham doing it recently. So when it's your team's turn to do that, yes, you're a bit more involved because you think it's almost within touching distance. Oh yes, look, we can break into this group. And then your team falls away, and the same teams prosper. Obviously, you've got new blood in there, like City, who have just spent billions. Chelsea, to what, like in the early noughties, did the same, got themselves into the club. And it's just like, I think what the difference between Everton under Moyes and the difference between Everton now is, under Moyes, Everton were a team with limited resources, right? So you signed players. We signed players cleverly. Yeah, occasionally we did spend a little bit more money. The likes of Yakubu, Fellaini came in for eight figures rather than like sort of loan deals and whatever. These players came to Everton on not low money contracts, but never big money.
Right.
So they were making like a decent, good wage for a footballer, but not a huge wage. Their motivation was to play out of their skin to get that big move. They got a move to the big clubs, and that's when they got paid, right? These are professional athletes. These have a very finite amount of time in their lives to make money. So it's all about maximizing as much money out of it as you can, right? Look at the contracts Everton handing out now. Players like Alex Iwobi are making 60, 70 grand a week. Where's his motivation to win games?
In the past,
he doesn't need to. He's got a 5-year contract. Down from
Arsenal, especially, like what he's like. Yeah, I've done this.
He's got a 5-year contract, making millions a year. He doesn't have to do well. He can sit there. He can ride that contract out. Cenk Tosun, massive money, doesn't have to do well. He can ride that contract out. Yeah. Same happened with Sandro Ramirez, Yannick Bolasie, Gylfi Sigurdsson. He shall not be named, etc. They have no motivation to do better or to win things, because, like, yeah, we say, oh, yeah, athletes want to win all these trophies. Athletes, yeah, it looks great if they can finish their career and say, oh, I won such and such and such and such and such and such. All they really are motivated by is how much money they make.
Yeah.
That's not a criticism of them. If I was in that position, I'd be doing exactly the same.
Well, it's money plus you know, their brand and all that stuff too, Keith. Like they want to play for a Champions League club, but that's mainly because it's just I want to be on TV the most. I want to be like it goes back to that whole idea of when Richarlison goes home to Brazil. He is playing on an infinitely larger stage than anything that Everton can provide. And like, so, you know.
Yeah, you will get players like Richarlison who will play better. Like, he's on a huge wage as it is, but he will want to move on to better himself. He's, like, of that mentality that he wants to play at the highest level.
And by the way, Keith, I want to point this out. I don't begrudge a player at Everton wanting to play well enough to get a move to the next level. Like, that's not my problem.
I think the problem is just that
we get obsessed with the idea that, like, you know, that we make these choices with the idea, well, we've got to keep hold of this guy. Whereas maybe sometimes it ought to be, we have to maybe know when the right time to move someone on is, but we also need to know not to pay players who haven't accomplished enough money that suggests that they have, and that's.
I mean, you look at the
in order to be competitive. I mean, it's a tough thing. Yeah,
it's another thing. I don't know if it's unique to Everton or if it happens across the board. And I haven't done the necessary legwork, and I'll be honest, I'm not going to do the necessary legwork. dead boring. But Everton are guilty of a player has a run of, say, 6 months of good form or decent form. Quick, give him a new contract. We don't want him leaving.
Michael Keane.
Yep. New 5-year extension out of nowhere because he had like a run of, 6 months of good, like decent performances. And then you're stuck with them because as soon as they get this contract, they're like, well, okay, I've got it now. That's me. I'm happy. That's me. 100 grand a week, £5 million a year. We're paying some players who aren't performing to standard, and they're not going to, there's no motivation for them to pick up their standard because why would they? They're going to get paid regardless.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah. It's just, so for me, it's not a recency bias that, the product of the Premier League is diluted. The product's always been diluted. It's never been great. It's only great when your team goes through that period of, we're a contender. We look decent. Oh, football's great. I'm enjoying watching football. And then your team fades back into the background because football is, like all things in professional sports, are cyclical. And you go through the period of, it's crap now. It's like, I'm not really engaged. I'm not really interested. You go along to Goodison on a Saturday afternoon for another matinee of meh. And it's just...
Matinee of meh. That's the name of the show.
It's a constant thing. And like probably in about 5 years, 6 years' time, Everton will be like back up at that level again. And they'll be doing well. And everyone will be, this is great. We can really kick on now. We can really do well. And we won't. I mean, spoiler alert, it's not going to happen. No. The 80s, like, Everton fans have got this entitlement as, like, England's fourth most successful club of all time, etc. Oh, we should be up there. Nah, we're not entitled to anything. The 80s was a blip. The 80s was, the exception that disproves the rule. Otherwise, the entire history of Everton has been absolute garbage. From start to finish.
Fuck me. I don't know about absolute garbage.
Some good teams. It is despairingly
more than
anyone would want it to be. But we should definitely just sound clip that and it should just play when you go on the Blue Room website.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, the history of Everton Football Club.
Yeah, right.
I think you're right. Like, you're right to point out that there's always been the haves and the have-nots. I'm not disputing that notion, nor am I high enough to believe that this league will ever adopt any kind of rules that would enable a more level playing field just because there's too much greed and there's the same group of haves that control the entire league, and they're just, they have no incentive to let others, like when Leicester City won the title, they're going to make sure that never happens again. Mark my words.
I mean, that was definitely nothing to do with inhalers or blood bags.
No, it took
not one little bit.
But my point is that I do feel like whether it's not that there are still haves and have nots, I just feel like the distance between the haves and have nots in terms of, you know, whether it's just the hoarding of players, whether of quality players, or it's just the fact that the wage bills are, there's such a, you know, every player, like we think about our players and how overpaid they are. And they are, I mean, a lot of them are, no question. But these clubs are just chock full of dudes who play a handful of games every year who make that much or significantly more on wage because, you know, United can afford to just be in deep in debt because they print enough, you know, they make enough money in other ways to just say that, well, financial fair play, you know, as long as I can sell ad space and hoard products, then it's fair for me to hoard as much talent as possible in the league and for it to persist this way. It's funny because I don't know if he's got anything. He could just be their form of their version of Davy Klaassen. But I think about the persistent discussion of Van de Beek from United, who inevitably will end up at Everton because all failed United stars end up at Everton at some point. But I look at someone like him and I think they went out of their way and paid pretty good money to sign him, out of the Dutch league a couple years ago. They, until today, I guess he's starting against Villarreal in Europe today. But I'm just thinking, they can afford to go hard after guys, sign them, and just stash them and just put them on a bench. Or in the case of Chelsea, just have a loan program that involves at least 100 players. Yeah. And you're like, well, why aren't all these talented players why aren't these other clubs in the Premier League have access to this? It's money, but it's not just money. It's where the line between having resources and being greedy comes into play, because the hoarding of players is not just about that club's ability to stockpile talent, like they're going to use it all, because they won't. It's more about keeping other clubs from having access to those talents as well. So if you have the money, you sign as many players as you can, quality players as you can, which, I mean, that's the idea, I guess. But, you know, the fact that you then just export those guys all over Europe to other leagues on loan, and then you call this a fair system, it's just silly. But to that point, I think that the reason I think having the same conversation, and this kind of gets back to the original point, but having the same conversation every year about Everton and the problems Everton have, which are valid, without at least asking questions about the larger context of what the sport, or in this case the league, is suffering from in terms of what is fueling that indifference, what is fueling that kind of blah, you know, football. Yeah. I think, you know, like we feel like there is the Everton fan feel like thing. The feel like is that we are the worst team in the league. The reality is that right now we're in 11th. It feels like we're going to get relegated this season. The reality is we're 5 points off of fifth. The problem is that the reality starts to matter less and less when the feel like part of that equation becomes so pervasive. And the players feel that their motivations are compromised by it. And obviously having bad decision makers at our own club who pay money because it feels good to look like a big club, as opposed to actually, you know, thinking outside the box and saying, well, if we're really honest with ourselves, we're not really there yet. So maybe we need to do this a different way. Maybe we need to, you know, to find efficiencies in places that they haven't been found before, because there's a reason why certain players are being sold by those in your league. Like, now that I look at Alex Iwobi, you used him as an example, you know, the second that Arsenal, a club full of as much, if not in some cases, far more dysfunction than Everton, who have been far more underwhelming than Everton in a lot of ways, given their resources for the last decade or so, the fact that they were wanting to sell him and ask you for that much money, we should have hung up the phone immediately. But we were so desperate because, if you guys remember the context of signing Alex Iwobi, we, meaning the collective Everton, we felt like we had to get a guy in or else at the last second in that window, or else that whole window was going to be a failure, right? And that whole feel-like factor for Everton, instead of using logic and intelligence and some things, I think has been a big contributor to the problem. But I also think, frankly, the players that are at Everton, not all of them, I will point out, by the way, the irony of the fact that our best players, the ones that do consistently give a tremendous effort for this club, happen to all be the ones that are injured right now. Like, there's nothing more laughable to me than when people talk about how, like, I get it, you want a player to be as available as possible, but sometimes just because a player is fit doesn't mean that they're actually committed. Michael Keane never gets hurt anymore. Believe me, I've tried to will it into happening so I didn't have to look at him play anymore. But he still plays every week, and he's awful. And yet, and so Alex Iwobi, he's available, guys. Like, I am that part makes me crazy, but we get some of those players back. Yes, you hope to see incremental improvement or whatever, but we're just addressing and talking around the perimeter of these issues. I think the league is broken in a lot of ways. And so, going back to market conversations we've had somewhat recently, I think if you're supporting Everton, you've got to find other reasons that satisfy you about being a supporter of Everton. The community, the family, the going to Goodison and just enjoying being out at the game. I don't know. I know that sounds really defeatist, and I know that does not sound very NSNO and all that shit, but what alternative am I left with? Because a lot of these players don't look interested, and it's a symptomatic of a league that seems to have some real talented clubs at the very top of it and a lot of major indifference throughout the rest of it.
It's funny, from an in particular player point of view, I think whenever we go onto this subject of, oh shit, let's just keep everyone here, Richarlison is obviously the first one that comes up. And I think that the collective attitude we've had towards Richarlison in the last few years is that it's really going to hurt when he leaves. And I think I actually like Richarlison enough now to think it actually hurts to watch you stay. It's definitely got to that point where it's just, It's awkward having the caliber of players that we know deep down that we do. And as you say, Rob, unfortunately, to a man, they are all just currently unavailable. On that note,
by the way, Mark, that's the same reason that Keith and I's favorite player, Yerry Mina, like, I love him so much.
Because
I love him more than anything, and you guys know that. But, like, I kind of want him to go too. I don't want him to continue to be part of this mess either. Like, I think that... Like, that's why the relegation thing, I get why. I think I love the motivation of what the incentivization that relegation creates for the bottom of the league. Mm. Man, what Everton really, I wish Everton could do is just completely sell everybody, bottom out, and rebuild again. But you can't do that without being relegated. And Everton, we're going to have a hard time getting back to the Premier League if they get relegated. And it's just, they just feel stuck, and it sucks.
Well, Keith, talking about being stuck, we've got Brentford at the weekend, and that is now obviously going to be without Damari Gray, who looks to have sustained a relatively lengthy time on the sidelines with what was an adductor injury or a groin injury, I think.
Yeah, adductor, 6 weeks, I think they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, if I know Everton, we don't see him until the new year. Richarlison obviously is suspended for the game coming up at the weekend. And with that in mind, is Solomon Rondon coming on for Fabian Delph the worst substitution that Everton have ever made, ever?
No.
Go on.
No. And do you know what? It was two infinitely better players involved in said substitution. But I will tell you the worst substitution Everton have ever made. Obviously. And it was David Moyes at Arsenal away, and it was the game Robin van Persie scored that ridiculous volley. And literally like 30 seconds after he'd scored that volley to put Arsenal 1-0 up, Moyes brought on Sylvain Distan for Louis Saha to try and protect a 1-0 defeat.
No one looked at a 1-0 defeat like it was going to somehow get them half a point like David Moyes.
I just genuinely, like, I watched that game on Iraq Goals on a stream in a hotel in Israel, listening to Israeli fighter jets screaming overhead on the way to, like, blow the shit out of the Gaza Strait. And that might be, like, the crowning moment of when I decided David Moyes needed to leave Everton. That might have been when he lost me. That or the sub that he made at Oldham away when he brought Shane Duffy on in the 96th minute to defend a corner. Yeah. And the man that Shane Duffy was marking, Matt Smith, scored from said corner. And they took us to a replay. So there are two terrible Everton substitutions that rank way above, like, bringing on shite for shite when we're getting beat anyway.
Me and Matt went.
Mark, what option? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
So the guy you scored, was that the guy you dumped Liverpool out in the round?
It was, yes. Matt Smith, he had a head like a Hovis loaf.
What is a say that again? A Hovis loaf?
A Hovis loaf. Hovis is a brand of bread, like sliced bread. I don't know what you'd call it, like what brands you've got in America. You've got Wonder Bread, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got other brands of bread. Yes.
Other brands are available.
Yes.
Going at my best BBC broadcaster there. He had a head like a loaf of sliced bread, and he just come up and netted the winner in the 96th minute. That was very, very, very Moyes. I think that was the coining of the term, the Moyes sub.
I was, man.
Yeah.
God.
David.
This is why I could listen to Keith talk all day, Mark, because he's got nuggets like that. See?
Well,
wanted to know where the Moyes sub came from? There it is.
Not to totally take it away from Keith here, but I do want to leave the last point to you in terms of going back a little bit to Damari Gray's injury. Not necessarily him on a personal level, Rob, but you mentioned Danny Donaghy earlier in the show, and obviously...
By the way, just a quick one on that. How good was Rob's pronunciation of Donaghy? I loved it.
I was Did not I say Donaghy or whatever?
Donaghy.
I don't know. It looked
Daniel Donaghy. It was very... Daniel Donaghy.
That's the Brooklyn side of my upbringing coming out. That's where my dad
in the spirit up. Of me maturing, I was not going to go there, but I was going to allude to the fact that Rafael Benitez has obviously taken a very quick glance of Everton's medical services and decided that it needs a bit of a shake-up. Do you know what? None of us are on the inner circle of Everton staff. We're not going to be able to say that is the absolute right or wrong answer, but... Rob, I think from a wider point of view, you've kind of suggested in the past that Everton's long-standing problem with long-term injuries stretches way beyond the coincidence. And it does feel as though there potentially could be, I don't know, a malaise in that area of the club that has potentially led to some of the soft tissue and the persistent long-term injuries that we've seen. And it's obviously been intensified of late because the quantity of injuries is there, and obviously it's to our higher quality players. But is there anything, do you think, to suggest that there's something in this in terms of Everton contributing to their own physical downfall?
Well... The obvious preface here is that I am not in any way medical professional, nor am I even adjacent to a medical professional in any meaningful way. But I will say, well, I mean, other than you, Mark, I guess, Mark, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there we go. But I think I would say that this move seems like the move that you make when you finally internalize that whole notion of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yep.
At a certain point, regardless of the fact, like, it's not Danny Donaghy. Donaghy? Sure. There we go. Okay. It's not all his fault, clearly. I'm sure he is well trained. I'm sure all of these things. But you know, we've talked about this several times. This sport and this league are currently grinding these players into a fine powder with the way that they manage the schedules, the international break. There are no breaks for these guys. I mean, I think about how much Richarlison played, over the course of the last 12 months, Yerry Mina. There are all of these examples out there. And I think that as from an attritional perspective that yes, playing just nonstop football contributes to players breaking down. Having said that, there's a lot of other clubs in this league who play more games than Everton do, who also have international players who do not have all the jokes about the inhalers, the steroids, all the other things aside. They don't have quite the extent of these problems. And I think that when you think about, let me just put it this way. We do a disservice, I think, to these players talking about how much money they make when we want to kind of beat them with that stick, while also not having really any idea what particular medical issue they're going through, why there's been a setback, you know, what the setback is attributed to, for instance. So, for instance, Yerry Mina's missed the last 4 matches, I think. He could have played this past weekend and they just decided, I think Benitez looked at that game and said, this is a wash. He's not going to rush Decore back. He's not going to rush Mina back, but whatever. So what do we know about their injuries? Well, we know, for instance, that Yerry Mina, quote, felt his hamstring at some point. I don't know what that actually means, what that means about the extent of the injury or what the rehab looks like, whatever. Calvert-Lewin suffered a setback, and we have received really no details. I mean, we received scant details on what the original injury even was. It was kind of a leg issue, kind of also a broken toe, foot thing. I mean, we're all just sort of guessing, and then we're getting angry at guys who aren't around to play enough, and then we are wondering, well, what the hell is going on with the medical staff? I think the medical staff is one part of this problem.
Mm.
And it's the most fixable part, if that makes sense, Mark, which is that you can't just snap a finger and replace all these players. But what you have done is you have made investments in transfer fees and contracts for these guys. And every game, like you think about that per week rate, you know, every game that a Yerry Mina or a Calvert-Lewin on his new deal or Richarlison on his deal, every week they miss, that is money just being flushed down the drain. And so you can't easily change them. But what you can say is that, hey, they're injured. They continue to get injured. They continue to have setbacks while they're in the hands of these medical professionals on our staff. Something isn't adding up. I don't know exactly what that is, but I think that they look at the situation and think, I think someone like Benitez probably says, I want to bring my own guy in because I've had success keeping players fit with my guy, and therefore we're going to use him. Now, of course, Rafa Benitez doesn't understand that this is Everton and that the forces of darkness are far greater than, you know, simple medical proficiency that he can import into the club. But we'll see how it goes. I don't blame him for making the change because as nice a guy as Danny Donaghy apparently is and how beloved he ultimately was, at a certain point, the buck stops with him and stops with his staff on the project processes and procedures that go towards rehabilitation. Things just aren't working, and the same problems are persistent.
Yeah, I think obviously at times like this, you can do is simply will change to happen, and whether that is through a medium of luck or actually getting a bit hands on with this thing and saying, well, do you know what, this is the constant that I can change. This is the the opportunistic thing that I can do in terms of just making that shuffle up. And by all accounts, he's done it at previous clubs as well. But I think we all just collectively agree that we're ready to actually put our strongest 11 out now, because I'm thinking back to when, even if we say Gray, Decore, Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin all play together, you're probably looking at Brighton away or somewhere around there as being the last time that we were actually able to look at this team in the mould that it actually should be. Albeit, we are not going to see that this weekend, lads. A great chat on the back of Man City. I know it feels like, excuse me, I know it feels like that we go big picture quite a lot of the time at the moment, but that is unfortunately where Everton pushes us in dark moments. And we are hoping that this is going to change massively in the coming weeks. And obviously, Brentford looks like being the best chance over the next four or five games to change the tide. So thank you very much for Rob. Thanks for Keith for joining us. We'll obviously have subs weekly coming up this week. And we'll have the preview to a trip down to Brentford. Obviously, Everton's first Premier League. Excuse me?
David Downey's returning this week, by the way, to subs weekly, I believe. Or is it the weekly? I can't remember.
So, and obviously Dan Donacci will be joining us at some
Dan
point.
Donacci.
Danny Donacci.
But yeah, safe travels obviously to all the Blues going down to what I imagine will be most of their first trip down to Brentford. I think we all collectively want to try and get down there and hopefully get our first win in that new stadium, as much as we are pinning all of our hopes on a pretty decrepit squad at the moment.
Is Brentford near lakes of any note, guys?
Well, certainly not the lake.
No.
There may be a small body of water that we can they can move away to for a moody affair after the game. But unfortunately, Rob, I think we are stuck with simply the 90 minutes of painful football. But that's it from us on the Kick About this week. Look forward to speaking to you next week.
Progressive presents, don't do it yourself.
Okay, simple enough. Just got to get in there with my screwdriver. Do you mind handing me my screwdriver?
Are you trying to say screwdriver?
Well, I mean, you're saying it weird, but yeah, sure.
Look, maybe we should bundle our home and auto with Progressive. We could save big and pay someone to install this for us so you don't have to pretend you can.
I know my way around a screwdriver. Oh, yeah. This is going to take a Philippe's head for sure.
Save when bundling home and auto with Progressive and use the money to, you know, not do it yourself. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and third-party insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.